Pippin, and welcome back to our UFO program.
In late December 1980, a series of reported sightings of unexplained lights and unidentified craft landings occurred in Rendlesham Forest, Suffolk. The two incidents took place in the vicinity of two former military bases, RAF Bentwaters and RAF Woodbridge, which at the time were being used by the American Air Force. On the 26th of December, military personnel witnessed strange lights in the forest. Thinking an aircraft might have crashed, they went to investigate. It's reported that what they found was a small triangular-shaped metal craft with strange markings. 2 days later, the deputy base commander and a small group of men witnessed other strange lights through the forest trees, including a red sun-like light which moved about and pulsed. Despite witness accounts, the MOD did not investigate any further, as they didn't believe it was a threat to national security.
That's a soundbite that we lifted off of this morning, the TV show, the BBC. And the reason I played it is they pretty well cover the events of Rendlesham, and whether or not they got them all right or not, we'll talk about that with Peter and Larry Warren. Peter Robbins, of course, both of them are on the line, and it's interesting. I'll bring them both on here in a moment. Peter I've known quite well, and I just found out during the break that Larry Warren stopped one time in Las Vegas while I was doing a show and introduced himself. And as I said earlier, that I had never met him in person, so I was in error. He said, well, it was a pretty brief conversation. Larry Warren, is that about the way it had happened?
It was down in Laughlin, and you were dealing
with... Oh, in Laughlin, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
At those great conferences that are not there now, and... I walked by, and I think Nick Whitman.
Yeah, I was always parked out there in the middle of the lobby with everybody.
Yeah, and I went by, and I just said hi to you, and I sat and listened to you interview someone. I was about 4 feet from you, but you were doing your work.
Yeah.
So fair play. There's a lot of people at those things.
Yes, that's true, and Larry Warren, it's great to meet you in person again on the phone, I guess, this time, but at least now I'm concentrating on talking to you instead of doing an interview with someplace, but I'm glad you came by that time. We had a lot of fun at Laughlin.
They were the
with all of those UFO Congress things, and they're going pretty well in Phoenix. Peter Robbins, you were in Phoenix the last time they had the last one, the UFO Congress. It goes pretty well there too, huh?
I was. It was the second year, of course, that they had it in Phoenix, and I think they've made the transition very well. It was well organized, well attended, had a lot of fun, a lot of good speakers, and it's nice being back in Arizona.
Now you're at a party right now.
It doesn't
sound like it. You're back in the bedroom or something. Tell us what's happening there. Is that your nephew that graduated?
My nephew graduated from Cornell yesterday with a BFA in History and American Studies. I couldn't be prouder of him. And for anybody on Facebook, just go to my Facebook page to see some pictures of the graduation. And Cornell, of course, is a huge and highly respected school, but they had almost 5,000 students graduating with bachelor's and master's and doctorates. So the first part of the event yesterday was held in a full football stadium. Pretty intense.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. 5,000 yeah. Graduates, wow.
I'm proud of that boy, too. I've known him, David, since he was just a little peanut
yeah.
there. And, well, he isn't now, but that's great, and congratulations to him.
You know, yeah, I already gave him your congratulations, Larry, and they're all outside having a grand time. The weather here in central New York State is hot but beautiful. Sun is setting over Lake Cayuga, and all is well.
Well, it's
okay,
warm. We've got warm weather in England, too, good, finally.
Yeah, yeah. What's it like in England this time of year? Does it get up to the 90s like here?
Well, it's hitting the 80s, and that's a lot for the UK, and it's only in the last week. And so it's fried out, people, because our infrastructure here isn't really designed for really warm weather. And so now it's about 3 days in, it's taking people out, because you won't find air conditioning in most houses. As we never need it. You need your heat on most of the year up in the north here. But we've had great weather. And because it's been great, it will probably end tomorrow, and that's our summer, 3 days. That's all we get.
Well, Joe, our producer for IRN for Inception Radio, he's in Chicago. He's just telling me before we started the show that it's 95 degrees there.
You guys can keep that over there. Keep that there.
Here in Oklahoma, it's in the 80s, so it's that time of year, Memorial Day in the States, as you know, Larry and Peter.
Happy Memorial Day to everybody over there. We have Remembrance Day over here in the UK, and if you're a Yankee over this way, you sometimes miss the, like Mother's Days are at different times of the two different months and from the States, and you kind of get confused after many years. I've been here a long time now.
You're actually an American-born person, right? Where did you live here before you went to America?
I was born in New York City and grew up in the East Coast and New York State and Connecticut and lived in the city and all over the place. And I've been over here since 2000. And my son's English, and I live about a mile from John Lennon's house, and Ringo's maybe a mile down the road, and George and Paul, it's all South Liverpool, so that's where those boys came from, and so I'm right in the footprints of all that. Penny Lane's just a little bit down the road, and it's weird. You take it for granted after a while that you're right in the heart of it with those four guys, five guys, six guys, whatever. Changed the world, and they came from right here, and it's a great town.
Peter, we haven't mentioned you guys' book yet. Larry Warren and Peter Robbins wrote one hell of a book, and it's a big and well detailed. And it's Peter, is there anything that's outdated in that book? I mean. It seems to me like you guys had it pretty much right on from the first.
Well, we will remain very proud of that book for the rest of our lives, and I think, as you know, Jerry, it was republished 7 years ago in 2005 on the actual 25th anniversary of the events of December 1980. And it's now comes to almost 540 pages. For any of you listeners that are not familiar with it, the title is Left at East Gate, a firsthand account of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, its cover-up and investigation.
And, Larry, when you first met Peter, he told me one time he saw you at a conference or something. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That was 87, and it was Washington, D.C., at the American University. And I MUFON, that group there, asked me to do a paper for them. And, I'm not a researcher. I just got up and said what I said. And I write about that in our book. But I had begun the book a year before, the idea for it, the title, et cetera, and it was Whitley Strieber that told me when he was working at Communion, and I'd been misrepresented in a book or two by that point, because I've been public since, it's my 29th year since I went public with it, and so he said, you should write your own, and I'm thinking, well, I don't know how you go about that, so the title was the first thing that came to me, and I knew immediately I needed to get someone else involved in this, because I'm not a trained writer in any sense. And I just write like I speak, And then a year later, I got at this conference, and I heard this fella speaking in a panel of abduction, and Whitley was on that, actually. And Bud Hopkins maybe was there, and a lot of those people, Dave Jacobs. And this fella came out in the hallway, and it's how a lot of these weird things in this short life fall together, and I just looked at this guy, and I said, oh, you know, I dug what you said in there, because Peter just kind of evened out a few things. I forget what he said, but it made a lot of sense on whatever it was, and I just said, man, this guy, I just got to talk to him, and that's where it started, and that's a billion years ago. Who knew? He didn't know what he was getting into, but I knew. I said, after I met him the next week in the city, and I said, you know, this guy's got a, you know, I went down, bought him a lot of stuff, and, you know, I said, you know, would you consider co-authoring a book?
And, well, Peter, Larry's version pretty much gels with yours, so.
Also.
And you had a very interesting reaction about seeing him the first time, just like he did you. Kind of chemically, I guess it came together.
Yeah, you know, Jerry, in the field of serious UFO studies, there are an awful lot of people that claim certain things that there's no way of absolutely confirming 110%, and a number of them, some of the more colorful ones, say, you know, when I was in the military, I was privy to information, or I saw this, or this happened to me, and of all the people I had ever heard make claims and things, I'll tell you what, Larry was the real deal for me, and I was so caught up in his talk that I just had to hear more of this, and as he said, when we met in the hallway, we both had our own agendas. Larry was to find somebody to work on, to write this book with him. Mine was to do an interview with this guy, and I was really pleased that he not only agreed to do it, but he came down to New York to my apartment the following weekend. And I recorded, I think, the greatest interview I had ever done at that point. And late in Sunday afternoon, he told me how what he really was looking for. And all I could think of was, wow, you know, write a book. That's very exciting. And, you know, it'll take a year or two. We'll spend a couple of $1,000s. It'll be obviously a huge bestseller. We'll be rich and famous. You know, George Clooney, he wasn't around yet, but, you know, we'd have a great movie being made of it, and the rest of our life would be Easy Street. Well, I got that part wrong. And 10 years later...
Well, you got a little dose of reality of the publishing business, but it's actually been a big success, this book has.
Well, again, we're very proud of it, and always will be.
The best part for me when you do a book on, or any book, and if I never do another, was when we were in Philly, I think, in 97. And we did that gig with Carl Bernstein from Watergate, all the President's Men. And he said, we popped that first case of the book, just got delivered to us. And, you know, you talk about this thing for 9.5, 10 years, which it took us to do it. And because there's no guarantees you're ever going to get publishers. And we had real life, a divorce in the middle of it with me and all kinds of just about every darn thing that you can imagine. And just I've never matched that thrill of opening that box. And I always keep pulling that book out. And I've never quite matched that, you know. And after a while, then when it was done, I'm like, oh, God, this is too personal. I don't want anyone to read it. It was the weirdest dynamic. And I would not change. We've had maybe not financially, but, I mean, it was never set out to do that. And we spent far more money than we'll ever expected to see. And but the book was designed to do one thing. It was kind of an apology to my ex-wife. It was an explanation to my family. It was this poor guy on the other end of the line, Peter, went through. He got sucked into the mail being open and all kind of nefarious things going on. He had his good name. Well, lately, this has gone on with there's just this unholy union of certain people around this thing. It's a very toxic, nasty event, chain of events. There's nothing New Agey and peaceful about Rendlesham and happy and hobby-like. There's nothing about that. Our book was designed to do one thing, is to really set things right with my family and people I may have damaged through my damage from there and what they did to us after the fact, which is established, and then, but it was to get people to talk. It was to open up a dialogue. It was the first book by someone who was a witness, and I was a witness to what I say. Now, do I have a perception of it that is inaccurate? There was a lot of mind control. This everything I find it fascinating. Everything I've said, and I don't know what this stuff was. I was in the forest. What planet or dimension or from the future? our book deals more with those things are great for speculation. It gets you nowhere, really. We'll know when we're dead. Our book is an excellent tool to see abuse of power and how this issue is suppressed and covered up. And I put my name to it. Here I am. I'm from a good family. I won't have my family's name dragged through the mud at all, and or my co-authors. And we're very proud of it. We did it. We caused a lot of hell because we did it and shook up a lot of people and at high levels. And we know that because I lost my passport for a while. And it took the former U.S. Attorney General named Ramsey Clark under two presidents, thanks to Peter knowing him or knowing people who knew him, and they got it back. Now, they don't do that to people that aren't telling it straight. So we've been down our road. We've earned that badge. And we're very proud of it. And it's done what it was set out to do, was to get people engaged, to talk, to get witnesses to come out. And I think, as the SAS, Special Air Service, would say, job done. We did that.
Yeah, Peter, I want to give both of you a chance on this show to really cover some things that you want to get out. And so I don't want to dominate everything, because I respect both of you. Both of you, a hell of a lot, as you know. And so, ultimately, before this interview is over, we're going to let Larry give his story the way he wants to tell it. But before we do that, Peter, I think we need to mention this conference coming up. It's coming up there on the 17th. And before that, you're going over to France. What are you doing over there?
Well, believe it or not, I'm giving talks on the Rendlesham Forest incident to groups in Bordeaux and Toulouse, and I've been signed on to do some episodes of a UFO documentary show. I'll be working in Paris for a couple of days, so I'll be warming up in France on this most important subject, and then heading over to London on the 10th, about a week before the conference. And really looking forward to it. And for any of your listeners in the UK, in Europe, anybody in the States that can join us, this is going to be a very special event. As Jerry has said, it's going to be on Sunday, June 17th, and it's going to run for more than 12 hours. And it's certainly not just Larry and I, and Larry will be master of ceremonies and joining me when I give my talk, which will not just cover some of the most important material that we were able to unearth, but it will be a respectful review of some of the other claims and explanations and a certain amount of really the controversy that still rages around this amazing subject.
Yeah, you mentioned raging controversy. You and I have had a lot of experience with people in Roswell, and it seems to me that, Peter, and Larry, you can chime in on this if you want to, it seems to me that there's just a lot of friction going on that's unnecessary at Rendlesham, and maybe it's orchestrated. Have you guys thought about that?
That's the word.
We have.
My friend, that is the word, man. I'll tell you, Jerry, dead on, mate, dead on.
Yep.
Two right, as they say in Liverpool. It can be nothing other than that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I have no problem agreeing with Larry here, and anybody that knows me knows I'm not the kind of person that jumps the gun or sees conspiracies behind every tree, but the attack that was quite sustained for some months on Larry and our book and myself to a degree, and then stopped almost dead a few months back, was, I'm as sure as I can be, that it wasn't just the invention of two of the other witnesses who have had their differences with us. Let's remember it this way. Jerry, you remember on the 50th anniversary of Roswell in 97, the Air Force issued a report as big as the New York City phone book. It was quite a few hundred pages. I think it was called Roswell Case Closed. And it was full of absolute nonsense about the crash dummies, which, of course, they didn't use till 5 years later, And it got me thinking, you know, here they were half a century after the event, and there was still such a push to belittle, to confound, to make fun of the story. 31.5 years later, the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident story is still causing a lot of problems in high places. And the idea of introducing the notion that it was only a psychological operation or that it was time travelers from our future I think in part are manifestations of a program to make people look at a little shiny object and look away from the real evidence of a truly extraordinary event, very well documented by Larry and I and others. And I'll be addressing that in no uncertain terms on the 17th of June.
Yeah, now Larry mentioned mind control a little earlier. A lot of people kind of look at you a little strange when you say that, but I've had experiences, as you know, doing these kind of shows over several decades. And somebody's tampering with somebody. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's something going on.
After the fact of these events, and everyone that comes out now and talks about it, and I was the first to say that, you know, and then I had to explore certain things and found out that it was even more clinical than some weird, you know, there were insertions in there. And way back, but then I come to find out, and I look at things, and I think my view now, I couldn't sum up better than what Peter just did, but my view now is that some of us were put in place as early as the summer of 1980. They were preparing us to be there, and I think there was some kind of, my view on the whole thing, there was some kind of experimentation going on to bring this phenomena, condense it into one area, to observe it, to observe how, I mean, real stuff, whatever it is, to observe, see, document from afar where people aren't aware. And I think a number of us, I wasn't even supposed to be on that darn base. And all these, and people say, why isn't that in the book? And I just didn't register with me then. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. So I'll walk away from it. But I had the easiest time in basic training, the easiest time in the police academy. It's like being in jail. I was allowed in basic training to go out to San Antonio with my father for dinner. You don't do that. I did. I mean, you have the wing commander of our base, Gordon Williams, who doesn't know anything or remember anything, come to... handle my discharge personally, and the wing commander doesn't even do that. He personally did that. And then you have, when in fact we were all given not sodium pentothal, like one of the other ones talk about, it was sodium amethol. And how I know is because myself, and I wouldn't say this if I didn't have a person of this caliber, and I wish they would say something because they were there, because I wanted them there. I was approached in Laughlin. And Jerry, and I think you would have been at that same event. It was the last Laughlin conference they ever had. And I filled in and spoke at the end of it. But before that, I was approached by a retired 4-star general who went to West Point with Gordon Williams, lifelong friends, and a female woman who was the only CIA agent who was a POW during the Vietnam War. And she was the only female, I think, POW, as far as I remember. But they had a message for me, and I'm not going to go into it on here. I can't, because Gary, there's a gentleman, Gary Haseltine. He's a CID detective here in Leeds, England, and he's a current CID detective. And, frankly, I couldn't even hear half of the stuff they were laying on me because they brought me some messages. And they were very real. In fact, this general went over my paperwork. I happen to have all this stuff with me because I was going to show it to a friend of mine, Ron, I think. And I happen to have it. And he went over stuff and he said, well, this is why this is. Gordo wouldn't have, he did this because of this. And I was given an apology. Via these people. Oh, yeah. and then reasons why certain things can't be and spoken about by certain people. And I'm very open person. I'm not one to, you know, I'm very open. And if I hadn't been, the thing wouldn't have popped when it did in 83. It had to come out. But, boy, it put me back to this whole big program they got called Preserve Destiny. And they have these people picked out. I mean, they go from the military an awful lot. And it's not weird time stuff. I have to say, Georgina Brunei, God rest her soul, and I'm not thrilled with how I was dealt with in the book, but I know why she did, you know, I don't look too great in that book. But her and I were personal friends, and we rectified the issue. She did a good job in that book, very good. And she was on to something very big, beyond the incidents. It was beyond, she identified the program behind the incidents and why certain people were put there. And that all began as far as early as the summer of 1980. I was going to RAF Auchinberry, and I'll just leave it at this, and if anyone knows how the military works, we have a day where your dream sheet comes up, and I'll never forget this day. It was a sunny day, and this guy behind me was in our ranks for the police academy, but his hair, you could judge the new guys. You know, we had short hair. It was just starting to grow out in the academy. And this guy had longer hair, you know. He looked like he'd been in a while, you know, but I'm naive 19-year-old kid, and you don't think of these things. And this guy came up to me, and they said, Airman Warren, RAF Auchinberry. And I'm like, oh, where's that, you know? And this guy, I tell you, he couldn't have made a beeline for me as I'm leaving the room quick enough. And he goes, Warren, where are you going? Auchinberry. He goes, my girlfriend's there, and, you know, Bentwaters is where I'm going. Do you want to switch assignments? So I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, you know, it's like got out of high school, you know, and so I thought it's like going down to the office and changing your gym class or something, you know. But the government doesn't work like that and at all. Nothing is quick. And within 5 minutes, he went to this thing, and they switched my assignments at this counter. And it was like this big deal. These people were coming up, and like, whoop. And they made a mistake there, and I wouldn't have caught on to it. And I was meant to go where I was going, and this guy was a facilitator because a number of us in that flight ended up at Bentwaters, and a number of us ended up involved directly or peripherally with these events. And then the really nasty stuff the intelligence community laid down after. And it's a big story. It should have been in our book, but I did not know it. I didn't want to know it. And none of it made sense. And I say, oh, that's too hairy for me, and I just can't deal with that. And that's where I'm at now. I just start to see this stuff was all planned out. And there was no accidents with a majority of the people being in it. Whatever happened, there was no accident. And I do think our command knew, certain ones knew very well what was going on. They knocked this guy, Malcolm Ziegler, he was their chief of security police. That guy couldn't have been a better pal than me, I'll tell you. These people, we were just guided right through, and me right out the door to do what I did. There's no doubt in my mind now. But when you're a young, stupid idiot, as young guys are, you know everything, you don't know anything. And in my 50s, I now know. And thanks to those people in Laughlin, and Gary, I hope you're listening and hope you can verify this at some point. You know, I had the big picture kind of given to me a little bit.
We're certainly not going to let this story go away.
It will never go. Like I've always said, you know, you take me out of it and all that, and it will never go away. This one will never. There's too many people involved in it. And, you know, there's problems right now with a certain quarter of it and perceptions and getting real personal and nasty, not necessarily accurate. And, you know, I don't want to jump on these other guys. You know who I'm talking about. Because they went through stuff. I that's the pain I have. Because if you read our book, I speak very highly of these people. And I didn't know them nothing. I don't know any of these guys, a lot of them. There's a lot of good guys. And then there's other guys that, you know, no, we wouldn't have a beer together in real life. But I respect the fact they went through this stuff and they got nailed. But I'll be darned if they're going to, you know, just sweep, particularly my co-author around. I can take it. I'll go face-to-face with anybody. But this guy, man, he's in there. He did the good work. If he thought I was BS, I passed lie detectors anyway. I have the documents proving my exposure. We have the proof of where one of the sites were for the landings, scientifically proven. But you know what? I think there's a major push right now to really, they want civil war. And when you're having civil war, you're not seeing the big picture, the man behind the curtain, and that's all it's about. I'll shut up now.